With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
There we go.
Oh, look at that.
Five seconds
is short. Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood, surprised again. Welcome to Make Me Smart Daily Edition, making today make sense one day and in some cases one second
at a time. It is. That's what it's like. It goes in waves, this ability to deal with all of this stuff. You're like, I'm handling this. I'm not handling it. Okay, I'm handling it. You know, it's just the weirdest thing.
I'm okay. I'm not okay. I'm okay. Yeah.
Right. Like exactly. That. Exactly. It is Thursday, so it's a pretty straight ahead thing today. 15 minutes, news fix, a little make you smile, and then some banter back and forth between me and Ms. Wood at various points, and then we'll be on our way.
A little chit chat, maybe a snack, a little chit-chat, then nap time. You know.
Could I go for a snack right now? Holy cow.
We bought some peaches and strawberries. Yeah. I will say it is sometimes kind of nice to have the child at home because he was like, I'd like some bread and cheese. And I was like, why don't I slice up some peaches and strawberries and we'll put sugar on it. The only way to eat that. And we just had the nicest little like midday snack break. Yeah. Like third grade.
For sure. Yeah.
Not so bad.
No, it is
not so bad.
It is not so bad. It is not so bad. Okay. What do you like?
I would like to discuss.
Yes.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
That.
Yes.
To the absolute astonishment, I was happy actually to see this get reported out hours after it showed up. So first thing this morning, Politico reported in their morning newsletter that apparently the federal officials, namely Steve Mnuchin and Treasury, in charge of reporting to the public what happened to the $511 billion in taxpayer-backed coronavirus loans. Basically said that they wouldn't. Like, just straight up, Mnuchin was like, oh, yeah. And it is gobsmacking, and yet it's not, right? Like this, okay, I'm going to back up a little bit, because you may recall that this particular chunk of money, this $511 billion, which was sort of just earmarked for businesses, was the reason that in, you know, the most flaming inferno moment of the pandemic and impending financial crisis, Democrats were like, whoa, we can't pass this because it just includes this like crazy slush fund in here. There's no oversight built in. You can't just hand out $500 billion to people and not tell the American people whose money it is where it's going. So they had this big argument, and then they included some oversight procedures in the bill. Since then, the administration has let go the inspector general who was in charge of what was going to be the committee to oversee this amount of money. And now, evidently, apparently, in a hearing Wednesday, Steven Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, and Small Business Administration Administrator Jovita Carranza basically were like, this is proprietary information. It's confidential.
Yeah.
It would risk the confidential business information of loan recipients to say who got the $500 billion in taxpayer money that everybody was worried that they might try to just like hand out and not tell us who got it.
Yep. 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 Sorry for the construction noise in the background, by the way. Yeah, it's I'm amazed. I'm also a little irritated with myself because I saw it this morning and then the day happened and I had to go downtown and do the show because of reasons that Kimberly had to do it yesterday because my equipment died, whatever, and I lost it. But this is actually huge, right?
This is
ginormous. It is keeping in the practice of the Trump administration to rebuff all attempts at oversight, but it's actually stunning. And I do wonder, obviously Republicans in the Senate will go along with this. I do wonder if anybody in the House is going to object, you know?
I mean, I would think that, yes, right? Yeah, I don't know.
You would think.
I mean, it is just, it's astonishing. It's absolutely brazen to basically have had this legislation held up at all, to have put these structures into place, and then to have systematically dismantled them and then announced we will not be held accountable for $500 billion of American taxpayer money. I will say, though, to your point, like it popped up on Politico. It went hours. And I mean, I think this Post story just went two hours ago.
Yeah.
Like there's so, this is the stuff that just gets like buried.
It's the fire hose.
Which seems insane because it's $500 billion of our money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that's astonishing.
I've been thinking a lot about, so there's an election coming up in case we had all forgotten. And if it goes the way the polls are now suggesting it might go, it will be interesting to see what happens in a Biden presidency because there will be no small amount of energy that will have to be spent reestablishing norms. And I think it's going to be a challenge for people who want Joe Biden to tack to the left, as we're seeing in the last couple of weeks, right? That's become an even greater pressure on him. While at the same time, there will be a constitutional structural need to reestablish some of these norms. And I think that's going to be taxing on whoever's in that job. For real.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the hiring alone, the literal restaffing of the American government apparatus alone.
Right. For sure.
Well,
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, speaking of norms, that actually gets us to my point, which is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff today, General Mark Milley, apologizing for appearing in that Trump photo op where they tear gassed and used flashbangs on the peaceful protesters in Lafayette Square so that the president could go over and get his picture taken holding a Bible. Milley, in many of the pictures of the walk, he was not actually in the big photo op, the formal photo op at the church, but Milley in the walk is seen in his combat fatigues alongside the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, and everybody rightly went, whoa, what is the principal military advisor to the president of the United States doing in a political opportunity, shall we say? And it's been 10 days, plus or minus. And then today, this morning, Milley apologized. And he said, I should not have been there. It dragged the American military into politics. And he apologized, which I think is good. I think it's great. And look, I understand there's a certain amount of circumstance that one gets oneself stuck in with this president, and you can set aside for a second serving in this president's administration. But I think it's good that he apologized, and I think this is another example of the norms that are going to have to be reestablished, because we all know the president likes to talk about my generals, right? You remember that in the beginning? All this talk about my generals? My generals are the best, and my generals are going to win in Afghanistan and all that stuff. And that's not the way it goes. Or shouldn't be, or hasn't been for 239-ish years, whatever it is. So props to Milley for apologizing for being in a situation he should not have let himself be put in the first place.
Right.
That's what I got.
He is also the one who wrote that letter, right? He a couple days after he put that letter out that reminded the troops that
he
was supposed to protect the Constitution and
protect
the freedom of speech.
Yeah. You bet. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, yes. That was good, I guess. Are you still there? Did we lose Kai? Kai is gone. Dear everyone, Kai is gone, which was good, I guess, in that I was at a loss for words. What do we think? Should we try to keep him back, or should I just keep going?
Oh, there we go. No, wait, I'm back.
You're back?
I'm back.
All right, well, we only have like 4 minutes left, so I guess let's try to see if we can make it work.
Unbelievable. Yeah, okay, so where were we? Where were we?
That gadget doesn't work. I was saying something along the lines of really, really, like, well said, that's crazy. I think it's
yes, that is crazy.
Basically.
Okay.
Something along the lines of, wow, look, everything is banana pants right now.
So 30 seconds of background. So yesterday, Wednesday, literally 3 minutes before air for Marketplace, a piece of equipment in my little shed here died, and Kimberly Adams had to step in and take over, literally on a moment's notice. And she did a bang-up job, but it's slightly heart-stopping when something like that happens. And what you might have just heard, if we leave this in the edit, is that same piece of equipment dying again after we thought we had it fixed. So, okay, let's hustle through our Make Me Smiles, shall we, and get this thing done?
Let's.
You go first.
Okay. Dude, well, I'm so excited because I was like, oh no, it's the 11th hour and I don't have a Make Me Smile. Let me just look on Twitter, which never makes you smile, but you know, hope springs eternal. And then I came across a thing that I didn't even know existed.
I know.
Which is Rate My Skype Room, Rate My Skype Room on Twitter. The Room Rater.
Yes.
And they're literally just like rating all the designs. And the reason I found it is because they rated Kai's little studio that he's in right now where everything keeps dying and falling apart.
Unbelievable. So the way it started was all these TV people at home with these nice bookshelves and lamps. And so this Rate My Room thing came out and said, oh, that's a 6 of 10. You need more color, splash of light, and put some art on the walls, right? And it's actually quite hysterical. All the TV people get it. And now... I don't even know if it's a guy or a woman, but the person did me. And so, first of all, I didn't really know we were doing radio, so I don't think that's cool at all, let me just say. And number two, I'll try to be better because I only got a 6 out of 10. And I'm frankly,
it was delightful. And then I got to say, I spent like almost all of the minutes and all of the seconds leading up to the start of the show reading Room Raider on Twitter. And just trust me when I say you want to scroll down a little bit in today's posts because they have Queen Elizabeth on a Zoom call with pearls on.
I know.
It will not surprise you to know she gets a 10 out of 10.
She gets like a 12 out of 10. You kidding me? Yeah.
The queen on Zoom. Yeah.
And props to her for doing that.
They said about Kai's setup, it's good, it's radio. I shouldn't even talk about it because they're going to be like, really? Why don't you, like,
I know.
What's with the janky fireplace?
And now I'm going to have to actually do something, right? I'm going to have to put more stuff on the walls, and I'm going to have to not wear a T-shirt that I got for a cross-country trail race. Oh, God.
Welcome to video. It's the worst.
Yes. Here's what I want to know. Does Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have to deal with this? Because that's not fair. There's a piece in the New York Times today about how Canadians and the rest of us who pay attention to politics north of the border are marking time in this quarantine period by the length of the prime minister's hair. And I love this piece so much. Number one, being in need of a haircut as I am. Number two, I frankly, cards on the table, I think Justin Trudeau is a fairly dashing fellow. I don't much care for his beard. I like them much better with a goatee.
I think so.
Okay. All right. Because he is, right? He's a hottie. Let me just say that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. But also, here's what I like. So they're quoting people in this New York Times article about how Canadians are keeping track of the prime minister by this and that. And Peter Donnellow, who's the director of communications for a former liberal prime minister, Jean Chrétien, says one thing Trudeau understands very well is the importance of symbolism in a leader, right? So going without a haircut while everybody else is going without a haircut and all this jazz, right? And then he says, this guy, he says, also, it helps that he looks like $1 million with his hair long. And I was like, yeah, you go. You go, Justin. You go, Monsieur the Prime Minister. Yeah.
The sort of like national... What is it? The national objectification of Justin Trudeau is never not funny.
I know.
Like, it is really consistently hysterical. And I'm sorry, but it's true. It's like growing out all curly.
I know. It's well like played. Wavy, and he's got some salt and pepper in the beard. I mean, come on.
Hysterical.
I'd be right if I look like Justin Trudeau. Anyway, we should go now before the Comrex dies and I get myself into more trouble.
All right, that is it. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, I think we made it. I'm pretty sure we'll be back tomorrow.
With another daily show. We will be back somehow tomorrow. We don't know
one way or the other,
but we'll be here. Yeah.
Exactly. Unclear if we'll get to see the slightly stark setup or not tomorrow. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, marketplace.org/newsletters. Keep the emails coming. Make me smart at marketplace.org. One way or the other. See you tomorrow.
Switch. Sam Anderson produces and directs. Digital producers Tony Wagner. Senior producers Jody Becker. Ben Hethcote does video for us with Ethan Parrott. Erica Phillips write our newsletters and also our smart speaker explainers.
Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. I just skipped ahead in the L's. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager who's getting the call about the Comrex again is Deborah Clark.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'm in the middle of like 3 emails to producers and technical people and
oh man. I want you to know that I fed mine a virtual cookie. I was like, I gave it a little pat. Good job, Comrex. You've been doing great.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.